This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Okay. Hi, folks. This is Richard Hall, and this is the Night Sky. Hello.
Well, it's showing.
This computer ain't working.
No computer.
We just have to keep talking.
You just come on talking.
Yeah, we seem to have a slight technical problem with our computer. You know what technology is like.
Well, what we could talk about is the fact that Space Week is coming up next week.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, well, not next week. It's the 4th to the 11th of October, which is not very far away. There are a lot of really interesting things going on in Carterton, and Stonehenge will also be doing some interesting events for that as well. There'll be a talk by Richard, which we'll probably see later on, and also something going on every day with a very interesting series being played at the Stonehenge and the club rooms, which will be completely free.
That's okay, right. Yeah. Well, we'll be talking about that in more detail in a later program. Anyway, we did have a few technical problems, but we're all together here. So we've got me, of course, Kay and Keith. Now, just to mention some of the things that are coming up. We're just coming up to the spring equinox. And we've got a special program on Sunday, September the 22nd at 5 p.m. The actual moment of the equinox is about 40 minutes after midnight on that day, okay? So what we're going to be doing is looking at special programs and what these things at spring equinox was all about. So there's lots of storytelling and possibly even some music as well. Another thing to remind you, daylight saving is coming into effect very soon. Sunday, September the 29th, all the clocks will go forward 1 hour. So we're beginning to get into the summer months. But what I thought I should talk about, first of all, there's been quite a bit of on the internet at the moment about the fact that an asteroid came whizzing past us, you know.
And yes, I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I put it up there, asteroid 2024, ON. Its diameter was 350 metres, and it was moving at 32,000 kilometres per hour, okay? It did miss us. Well, I think it's missed us because it's actually due to hit past us today, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's from our personal perspective, it's quite a long way away, but from an astronomical perspective, it's actually very close.
Yeah, it's about twice the distance of the moon, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty much in our backyard. Yeah,
yeah, but what people don't realise is quite a few of these things that come swinging past us. And, of course, the scary thing about it was that, a little picture I'll put up now, for example, 65 million years ago, an asteroid struck the Earth and it wiped out over 95% of all the life on this planet.
That was a bit bigger, though.
It was a bit bigger, that's right. Mm. But, of course, when we look back in geological history, this is not the first time this has occurred before.
No, and it depends where it hits, too. Yeah,
mass extinctions. Well, if you get a big one, it's going to have a worldwide effect because it smashes right into the mantle.
But if you get that one that is going past and it hits somewhere where there's population, that's a massive effect.
The little one we've just been looking at, I say it's a little one, if that had hit it, it'd be something like 1,000 nuclear bombs going off at
once.
Yeah,
I mean, make a bit of a mess of Auckland, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yes, you wouldn't be going to work at that particular time.
No, we'd probably have it three islands. An extra island. Bit of a gap in the middle there.
Yes.
So what NASA and others are spending a lot of time on is tracing these objects, all right? There's a vast number of asteroids in what we call the asteroid belt, and I've just brought that up. But there's lots of others there. And because there are relatively small objects compared to planets, the motions of the planets, Jupiter, Mars and so on, affect their orbit and can sometimes throw them out.
Jupiter.
Yeah.
Yes.
And just with a matter of happening every now and again, one of them will end up with a collision course of a planet. That could be us. So what And of course, that's caused mass extinctions in the past. But so what they're looking at is trying to trace all these particular asteroids and using some of the big space telescopes to track them down, to work them out. So if we discover, like in 6 months or a year from now, an asteroid is going to hit the Earth, well, maybe we can do something about it. Any suggestions?
I don't know. If you watched that film Impact, it didn't really do much good.
Well, the idea is if we can get or put a nuclear thing on it and nudge it a bit, we can nudge it out of orbit.
Yeah, you don't want to break it into pieces, though. You just end up with the same amount of destruction spread around different sites.
That's right, yeah.
Yes, the only thing you could do is, as Richard said, attach very powerful rocket motors to it, nuclear-powered rocket motors, if we have that sort of technology, and try and push it away from us.
Yeah, well, that's right. If you catch it in time, not when it's quite close to us, but when it's further away, you've only got to nudge it a small amount to throw it off that path that it's going to hit, miss the Earth rather than hit it, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, for those who are looking at it, all those little dots there are actually asteroids, all right? And of course, we've got the asteroid belt, which is between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. And there's clouds of them here and there, but quite a few of them wander in. And just in this last year, you'll have probably half a dozen asteroids come relatively close to the Earth. You know? And that's what we're keeping an eye on. So.
And of course, if anything went through that asteroid belt, it could disturb the,
oh God, yes.
The you know, the orbits of the things that are in there.
Yeah, well, that's what happens. It's unstable because every now and again it is a collision or whatever.
You know? Yeah, it's okay if it's left alone. Yeah. But if something relatively large came through, then it would alter quite a few orbits.
Yeah. So I think we're quite safe today, don't you think, Kay?
Yes, of course, everything is on an astronomical scale and our lives are very, very short.
Well, that's all, yeah. Makes you wonder if that asteroid hadn't hit the Earth 65 million years ago, what life on planet would be like now.
Well,
because that was wiped out the dinosaurs.
That was the dinosaur killer, and it gave the mammals a chance to thrive and evolve. So if it hadn't been for that asteroid, no offence, Kay, but you would be covered in scales and laying eggs.
still lay eggs. Well, not anymore, but you know, I'm a bit old for that one.
Right now, you're suggesting it could be three dinosaurs sitting around the table here.
Yeah, the dinosaurs would have evolved into intelligent beings with their talk shows on TV.
Yeah, it's amazing to think what would have happened if, you know.
Yeah, science fiction. Science fiction isn't so fictional when you just change a few events.
Yeah. Anyway, folks, what I've brought in, for those of you watching TV, so come up, celestial navigation. You want to find your way around the night sky, the first thing is you've got to be able to navigate around the stars. And the number one thing you always do, which I always do, if I'm out anywhere, is work out where south is, right?
Yeah.
And once you've got northeast, south and west, you can work out where things are rising, setting and what should be there. And what we use to work that out, of course, is the Southern Cross. And that's the reason why the Southern Cross is so famous, because it allows you simply to work out where south is at the moment. Now, what we're looking at is the night sky around about, I think it's about midnight, yes, all right? And the Southern Cross is actually its lowest point in the sky, sitting near the horizon.
And nearly upside down.
Upside down. That's what it was going to be like at midnight, right? You know, or you can always check that you've got the Southern Cross, because following behind it are the two pointer stars, right? And there are other little crosses in the sky. You can see another one just to the left of the Southern Cross. That's the False Cross there, okay? Right. The Southern Cross points to a bright star called Achernar. Dead easy to pick. It's any bright star in that region of the sky, right? And midway between the two is the South Celestial Pole. And the South Celestial Pole is the point around which the entire heavens appears to rotate. Right? Mm. Now, drop from the South Celestial Pole to the horizon and you're looking due south.
Okay? Yes.
So that's all you have to do. Find the Southern Cross. It points to Achernar, halfway in between south celestial pole drops to the horizon, you're looking due south. But of course, the position in the sky of the Southern Cross and Akinar is continually changing. But they were a distance from the south celestial pole that they actually, from where we are, for example, in the Wellington region here, they never set. So any time you go out at night, look up, you're going to find the Southern Cross out there somewhere.
Yeah.
So Akinar, for example, is going to move in a great circle around that south celestial pole. Same thing applies to the Southern Cross. So looking back, right, at 6 p.m, the Southern Cross will be there. At 6 p.m, you're not going to see it because you're still being daylight. But if you could see it, the Southern Cross will be on its side. Still pointing at the Akinar, as it shows there. And then it gradually moves down towards the west at 9 p.m. It's there. And then finally to where we would be at midnight, okay? So just bear in mind that always when you see a picture of stars, and that they are slowly moving all the time, all right?
Yeah. And that's because we're turning around.
Absolutely, yeah, that's right.
Earth turn.
Because of the Earth's rotation.
Yeah. As I said the other day, we talk about sunrise and sunset, but the sun actually sits still. It's Earth that turns.
That's right. So it's not, as Kay says, it's not the stars that are moving, it's the Earth. And I've just pulled up a picture of the Earth showing its axis, spin axis, but we need to get it correct first of all.
Mm.
Put south at the top, okay? And the south celestial pole is that point there. It's like the Earth's axis projected into space. And that's why that particular object, the south celestial pole, is used by navigators to work out their longitude, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
because
right.
It's always a number of degrees above the horizon equal to the latitude that you're standing in.
So if you go further south, it will appear to get a bit further away from the horizon.
Absolutely.
But if you go north and not very far, it'll actually dip under the horizon.
Yeah. And at the South Pole itself, it will be directly overhead.
That's right.
And go around in a circle.
So 41 degrees, and that's again why the Southern Cross was important, because navigators would use those stars to locate that spot, and then they could work out their latitude, where they were on Earth and so on. So there's a lot. There's quite a bit in that, Okay, so anyway, we've gone back to looking at the stars at midnight, and these are the stars of spring, actually. Each season has its own pageant of stars, and essentially the spring, and what we will call the spring stars, as we move in towards later in the month and so on, this view that you see of the Southern Cross at its lowest point. And incidentally, the Southern Cross is in the Milky Way, and what you get in spring is the Milky Way essentially laying along the southern horizon.
Yes. Right? Yeah, the two are quite near each other. Yeah.
I love the way the Maori texts say that. They say it lies in the eyebrow of the sky.
That's right,
I think that's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, you see, because in the past, as a kid, you would learn your way around the stars, no problem at all, because that's what you need to navigate, to find your way home and so on. We're not taught those things these days. But folks, it's not difficult to do. You'd be amazed how quickly, if you go out and begin to learn the bright stars, you start off by what I'm showing you now, finding the Southern Cross and Akinar, and then you can gradually fit in other
stars. You can use those as pointers to find some other ones.
Other objects in the sky and so on. And, of course, to our ancestors, stars were they were simply bright objects in the sky. They never knew what they were. Of course, what we do know is now is the stars themselves are actually suns.
Yes.
And Akinar is actually, I thought I'd tell you a little bit about Akinar. If you could fly to it and we'll get there, it would look something like this. All right? Its distance is 139 light years. All right? So it's not nearby. So remember, when you look at Akinar, you're seeing it as it was 139 years ago, right?
Yeah.
In turn, if it was somewhere out in that system, a planet around Akinar, and they were looking back at the Earth, they would be seeing the Earth as it was 139 years ago, right?
Yes.
Now, Akinar is what we call a blue giant. It's a lot bigger and brighter than the Sun. It's 3,500 times brighter than the Sun. And it is spinning so rapidly, it's ellipsoidal in shape. In fact, if it spun much faster, it would actually disintegrate. It's got a companion star, which you can also see there, and it's 18 times brighter than the Sun. And if we bring that up here, you get the real impression of the shapes of the two stars.
So was the companion once a much bigger star?
No, no.
It just is a small one?
Just, yeah. It's, they're actually quite young, with these stars we're talking about, because big, brilliant stars don't last long. Right? Mm. So they're young stars.
Mm.
I've just brought up the Sun, our star, to compare in physical size between those objects.
Yes. It seems that a lot of these bright stars, Richard, are also the rapid rotators. There's quite a few stars like that which are rotating so rapidly that they look like footballs.
That's right, well, because when stars form, they actually collapse from a cosmic cloud, and of course as you compress something, it collapses.
Just like a spinning...
It speeds up, exactly.
Yeah, ice skater, as they bring their arms in, they go faster.
And they go faster, and that's exactly what you've got.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes that will happen, and the bigger the star, the more likely that's to occur. But one of the important things is that with the Sun, for example, it's got planets, and those planets drag the Sun on the Sun, and they slowly have slowed the Sun down. So it's quite possible the Sun is rotating a lot slower than it was once upon a time.
Yes.
Yeah. But remember, our Sun is 4.5 billion years old. Akanar here is only a few millions of years old, you know, so that is the difference, yeah.
So it's basically, it's a rambunctious teenager at the moment.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. Well, all the big giant stars are, because they don't last very long. They burn out quite rapidly. Now, just below Akanar, but on that line from the southern cross, is the two Magellanic Clouds. And they look like detached portions of the Milky Way. Yeah? But these are actually nothing to do with the Milky Way. They're actually satellite galaxies of the Milky Way. Let's bring them up a little bit closer. You can have a look at them, okay? The larger of the two, called the Large Magellanic Cloud, is, as I put up there on TV screen, is 158,200 light-years away. Right?
Yeah.
And you know that this is a measurement done by things like Hubble Space Telescope, the fact that we've got 200 there.
Yeah.
getting really precise.
You're getting very accurate. Okay. That's the large cloud. And then we've got the small cloud, and its distance is 199,000 light-years, right? So again here, remember time, folks, if you're on a planet on one of the stars in a small Magellanic Cloud, looking back at the Earth, you would see the Earth as it was 200,000 years ago.
Mm.
You'll be seeing cavemen with saber-toothed cats and dire wolves. And
that's right,
that.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And by the way, I had a friend who asked me, you know, Keith, how do you find the Magellanic Clouds? Because I can see clouds in the Earth's sky. Anyway, how do you know which they are? The identifying feature is that they do look like clouds, like fairly small clouds, naked eye, but they have a very slight bluish tinge to them, which you don't see in normal Earth clouds. And that's how you can tell that you're looking at the two Magellanic Clouds.
And they're always either side of that line between Akanar and the Southern Cross.
And that's the other identifier, yes.
Well, the image you're seeing on TV screen is what you'd roughly see with a good pair of binoculars. Mm. And you immediately begin to see that. Now, the interesting thing, and what, we won't talk about that tonight, but we will in a later program, because the Magellanic Clouds are at the highest point. They appear, from what we're discovering at the moment, to be fragments, either from the Milky Way or from another galaxy, from a close encounter that occurred between the Milky Way and another giant galaxy.
Oh, when they were pulling at each other.
Millions of years ago, billions of years ago.
Oh.
We're going to have a look at that later on.
A close encounter, or did they actually pass through each other?
No, it was a close encounter.
Okay.
And this is stuff that's been ripped off, and then coalesced to form these little tiny dwarf galaxies.
They've got quite active starbirth, haven't they, which would go with being disturbed.
Yeah. That's right. Well, the Large Magellanic Cloud, which I've just drawn up now, when you look at this, you can see, begin to see the stars, but you can see all these pink regions, and what they are is star-forming regions, which Kay was talking about. Energetic regions where there's lots and lots of star formation taking place, and far more in the Magellanic Cloud because of that.
It kind of been stirred up.
And the largest region of all, there you can see down towards, is the Tarantula Nebula. I'll just bring that up a little bit. There's the Tarantula there. And it is truly a massive star-forming region. We go in a bit closer and have a look in here. And what we've got is a cluster of stars at the centre there. And over 100 of them are more than a million times brighter than the sun. So they just leave Achernar and others for dead. These are gigantic stars,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's not one, but about 100 of them there in the Magellanic Cloud. So there's a massive star-forming region. And these stars will only last for a few tens of thousands of years,
yeah.
And then they're going to explode. And we're going to have a whole series of supernova occurring there.
So they're all going to blow up as supernova explosions.
Yeah. Well, yes. Something has in the past, because there's a little hole there.
That's right. And this is what happens, is that when you get a supernova, the blast compresses the cloud, because it's normally formed from the material from that cloud, and it's still not very far away. But it compresses the cloud, and in the surrounding shell of that cloud, new stars start forming. But these will be smaller ones, stars like the sun.
Yes.
So there seems to be a process that takes place.
So from death comes life.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So anyway, keep an eye. So Tarantula, actually, I've explored this in a large telescope. It looks absolutely magnificent, the Tarantula. And it's a region we can explore, which is nothing like it that we can see. There probably is regions like that in the Milky Way, but we just simply can't see them from Earth. Now, it's the Small Magellanic Cloud. And you can see the shape of it. It's distorted. Right?
It's a bit more like a cigar, isn't it, facing away from us?
Yeah, tadpole. It's been gradually ripped apart by the gravitational tidal effect of the Earth. But what you immediately notice is, even with a pair of binoculars, there appears to be a bright object next to it. Right? And there it is. There. It's called 47 Tucanae. Right? And the reason why it's called 47 Tucanae is that the small cloud is in the constellation of the Toucan Tucanae. And this was the 47th brightest star. Now, this goes back donkey's years ago.
Before you could tell it wasn't quite
before,
a star.
Before there were telescopes, it was numbered out there, number 47.
It looked like a star.
But as you can see there, I just mentioned that the Small Magellanic Cloud is 199,000 light years away. 47 Tucanae is a lot closer. It's just
it's within our own galaxy.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it is also an absolutely magnificent object to have a look at. We'll have a close-up look at it. There it is there, looking into it. All right. It's what we call a globular cluster. It's spherical in shape. And we find these globular clusters around.
They're very old, aren't they?
They are extremely ancient. In fact, the first stars formed in the galaxy are formed in globular clusters.
Mm.
We're still learning about the whole process at the moment. But if you look at our Milky Way galaxy, surrounding it is a halo of globular clusters. They're normally very, very remote and very ancient.
A lot of them are quite coloured, those stars, too. They're quite orangey-looking.
Yeah, we've got to remember, first of all, that our ability to see colour with the human eye depends upon how much light is entering your eye.
The intensity of the light.
Yeah,
yes.
You've got two types of cells in your eyes, rods and cones, right? The cones give you colour vision. The rods give you black and white. But the rods are more sensitive, all right? And that's why when you go out at night, all the colour, beautiful colours you can see in the garden, they all disappear at night. The reason is, you're essentially, because there's not enough light to trigger the cone cells, you're using the rods, which give you black and white vision. So next year you're seeing black and white.
We used to have a saying, at night, all cats are grey.
Yeah, that's right. Well, see, the thing is, when we look up at the stars at night, they all appear to be white because we're seeing them mostly in rods. But actually, once you begin to look at stars through a telescope, where there's more light coming through, triggers the cone cells, and yes. you discover the stars are different colours.
Yeah.
You've got cool stars, which are red or orange, and then you've got yellow stars, like our sun, and then hot blue-white stars and so on.
Yeah, I can see orangey stars there, or slightly reddish, if you want to call it that. So that would mean they're older, wouldn't it, and they're going through their life?
Well, yeah, they're red giant stars.
Yeah, kind of finished doing what our sun's doing, and yes, they're moving on to the next stage.
Yeah, and you can see lots of white stars, but there's no blue giants there. They're all sent long gone.
Well, there's one down the bottom there, but it might be a foreground one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you are. But these are magnificent objects to look at, all right? So these are the bits and pieces that the galaxy was made from in the first place.
I can't help thinking if there were any planets in 47 Tucanae around one of those stars with intelligent life, what their night sky would look like.
It would be very light.
Yes. I don't think they'd have such a thing as night.
No, it's been calculated once. I mean, what you'd be looking at is just tens of thousands of stars brighter than the brightest star in the sky, in our night sky.
Yes.
It would be absolutely awesome, yeah.
If you think about how we have to be protected from our own sun by our magnetic field, there's not really that much chance there'd be advanced life on one of those.
No. That's the other thing you discover with them. The metallicity, the amount of heavy elements, is very low in there.
So they're earlier generation, yeah.
Stars create the elements, and then as they die, they blast out and they get swept up and used. So the younger a star, the higher its heavy element content. And we're made of heavy elements. The Earth is made of heavy elements. Carbon and all that sort of thing, all right? Those ancient star clusters, which have got an age, you know, billions, you know, something like 12, 13 billion years in age, they're very low in heavy elements.
Yeah.
So planets like the Earth and that would probably don't exist out there.
No, you couldn't have our kind of system.
Yes, because these stars are early generation objects, yeah.
Anyway, folks, keep a quick look at the south. We've got the Scorpion, which is setting in the west there, bring him up there. And rising up in the east, we have Orion. Of course, the Scorpion is our sign of the winter. So the winter is disappearing. Orion is our sign of summer. It's rising up. Of course, if you lived in the northern hemisphere, it would be directly opposite. Right? So Orion was always, where I come from in England, Orion was always a sign of winter. Yeah, that's right. So this is spring. And then if we turn round to the north, and we have to, quickly, we're running out of time now, we're looking away from the Milky Way, directly to the north is the Great Square. It's actually quite easy to pick up. It's shaped, the four stars that stand out. And rising up in the east is Matariki,
the Pleiades star. Yeah.
And what you're looking at now, folks, is that panorama of stars that you would see if you got up at dawn at the time of the Maori New Year. We're seeing those same stars in the evening. So there's Matariki rising up there. And above the Great Square is a bright star, and that star is not a planet star at all. It's the planet Saturn.
Yes.
Yeah, which is absolutely fabulous object. When you look at it in telescopes, doesn't
it? It's coming to having its rings edge on, isn't it? Which means they'll look as if they're disappearing.
Yeah, that's right.
Because you look, they're thin, and so, relatively speaking. So when you look at them side on, it almost looks like they're not there.
Yeah, that's right. So those are the... And in the later programs, we'll be looking at some of these things in much greater detail. And there are some magnificent objects here in that sky. You can't see them at the moment. Remember, I talked about Magellanic Clouds being formed by a close encounter. Well, then there's going to be another close encounter.
You're going to talk about Andromeda.
Yes.
Yes.
There is a big giant galaxy. It was heading straight towards us. But I won't worry about that. It's not going to happen tomorrow. We'll check it out.
It's going to be a little while before.
It might be a collision this time, okay? But anyway, we'll have a look at that in our next program. And we're doing a bit of radio astronomy, aren't we, as well?
Yes, next time we'll be doing some radio astronomy.
Yeah. Okay, folks, just to remind you about Stonehenge, we're open at the moment from Wednesday to Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We're closed on Mondays and Tuesdays except for private bookings.
Or public holidays.
Public holidays. We're always out on public holidays and so on. All right. Anyway, also remember, you can organise, if you want to learn the stars, we do Star Treks when we take your laser tours around the night sky. But you can always speak to Kay about that if you'd like to organise something there. And remember, once again, we've got the spring equinox. It's the next major thing we got coming up, all right, on Saturday the 23rd. OK? So there we are. OK, thanks. With that, I say bye-bye.